the World Soccer Talk podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. In episode 137, we discuss the impact of Christian Pulisic on NBCSN's viewing figures, an interview with the head of Tudo.NE to learn about Chivas TV, Spanish language Bundesliga TV rights, and more. Hope Solo makes her debut at beIN Sports. First impressions of the new Bundesliga and La Liga seasons, plus letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, and I am joined by my co-host, Kartik Krishnayar. Now, Kartik, where shall we begin? Probably the best place to begin is what we've been watching from this past week. Was there one match in particular that stood out for you as the most interesting or most exciting match?
Yeah, I think the two matches that were the most interesting for me were two matches early in the week. Bayern-Hertha, which was an absolutely fantastic match, although a moment of madness rescued a draw for Bayern. Fantastic match, 2-2 match at the Allianz. And Bayern reacted by, within an hour, linking themselves to Philippe Coutinho, who now has arrived at Bayern. That's how they reacted to not winning that match and falling behind Dortmund in the table. And then the other really fantastic match I watched was Aston Villa-Bournemouth. Now, people who know me, and even closely, including those who play Fantasy Premier League with me, think that I'm a closeted Bournemouth fan. Maybe I am. I'm constantly picking Bournemouth players on my fantasy team every year I've been playing, which gets coincided to first year I played was the first year Eddie Howe had that team promoted, so that's quite possible. And so I'm constantly watching them. But I also think Aston Villa, with all of their new signings, in addition to guys like McGinn and Grealish, who were so good in the championship, and Dean Smith's style, have made that a very fun team to watch. So that was a really fun game. And I would throw in there as a bonus, any match that involves Sheffield United has been fun thus far this season, although Crystal Palace is woeful, so that negated a little bit of it on Sunday.
Yeah, and we'll get into Sheffield United in a little bit. They've been kind of the surprise team in many different ways so far this season. For me, my favorite match of the week was Athletic against Barcelona, the opener to La Liga season on Friday. And this was a match that Barcelona didn't look that good, for sure. Luis Suarez came off injured pretty early. He's been poor in the International Champions Cup. So not a great performance by Barcelona, but just a fantastic overhead bicycle kick from, I think it was Urres, I think from Athletic, to win the game and to send a shocker opening day of the season. So what I liked about this game, especially too, just with all the controversy about La Liga and where it was headed and having it back on beIN Sports, but just watching this game in HD on a Amazon Fire Stick through Fubo, and just the picture was crystal clear. The audio levels were perfect. And I always love last couple of seasons, especially La Liga's on-screen graphics and augmented reality and all the special effects that they pull out for these games. And just watching it from kind of a technical production point of view was great. And the game itself was, maybe didn't match that quite quality, but the goal did for sure. What was interesting though, Kartik, was that this is the first time pretty much I had a chance to see Hope Solo on beIN Sports, and also new hire Kaylin Kyle, the Canadian footballer too. And it's early days, but they're both still finding their feet. But I think they've got a long way to go before they get to a point where they're going to be able to provide some really, convincing discussion analysis. It just seems that, I don't know, it was a weak start from my perspective in terms of what I was watching. I'm not sure if it was just they were trying too hard or just it sounded very scripted. It sounded very rehearsed, and it may not have been, but hopefully those two will get better with more experience under the belt. But it was the opening weekend for them. Now, in terms of something else I saw this past week, Kartik, and I know you saw a bunch of things too in terms of coverage, two things I do want to point out, and these are two complete different extremes. I decided to sit down because I saw a bunch of the promos for Inside the Mind of Jose Mourinho, which NBC Sports is being featuring or talking about or discussing. So I thought, you know, let me go back into the YouTube onto NBC Sports and watch that and see what I think. And I was blown away by how poor this was. I couldn't get... There's a four-part series. Sky Sports originally ran it. Now NBC is doing it in a four-part series. I couldn't get past the first part. Reason being is that, I mean, not surprisingly, but to watch this, I mean, Jose is so full of himself. I don't think there's anyone in the world of soccer that has such a big ego as him. And in that first episode, he's sitting in the car. He's driving, I think, from the port or the airport into his town where he grew up, which was interesting. But he's talking about himself in the third person with Gary Cottrell from Sky Sports. And it was just, I just could not get past it. I'm like, this is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, this is a man who, rather than, say, having the interviewer ask the questions about, so tell me about how you where you grew up and who are you, some of your biggest influences, or it was all about him talking about him being wonderful and he was waiting for the next big opportunity. If a Premier League club came along, he'd be interested. But if it's a championship or a second tier, he wouldn't be interested. And going through this whole rationale about how he was... It was basically almost kind of a demo tape for himself to try and land another big job, which if I'm any chairman of any major club, I would run far, far away from him. But anyway, that was disappointing. I did not get past the first part there. What I did get past, well, actually, I started watching a new series on Amazon Fire, on Amazon Prime, and it is as good in the first episode as Sunderland Till I Die, which is saying a lot. And this is a new one. It was just released on Amazon. So if you have Amazon Prime, you can get it through there. But it's called Take Us Home, Leeds United. And it's narrated by Leeds United supporter Russell Crowe. And it's the story of a sleeping giant. It's a behind-the-scenes documentary about last season, the 2018-19 season under Marcelo Bielsa. And this one, holy cow, the first episode sets it up to be... Hopefully the rest of the series is going to be as good, but I watched the first episode and I was blown away, and I'm really excited about watching this one. I'm not a Leeds United fan, but they take you, I mean, a lot of interviews with the fans, the diehard fans, the chairman, the history, the kind of the local reporters. This is really, really riveting stuff. So if you do get a chance to watch it, or if you're thinking about getting an Amazon Prime, check it out. It's called Take Us Home, Leeds United.
Let me jump in there and mention that This Is Football. I've been watching those periodically. That came out earlier in the month on Prime, Amazon Prime as well. It's a kind of a far-reaching documentary that looks at various aspects of the sport in different parts of the world. And the first episode is on Liverpool supporters in Rwanda, and even goes back to the 1980s and Ian Rush and Kenny Dalglish and how supporters in that African country, which was beset by civil war, bonded to Liverpool because of those two players, and Peter Beardsley also, who of course now has become a little more of a controversial figure, and then also has a dramatic retelling of the 2005 Champions League final in Istanbul and how it was viewed in Rwanda. So that's a really, really neat series, and that's 6 episodes. That's also on Amazon Prime. So we're not shilling for Amazon here, but they're two really good soccer documentary series that they put out just in this past month on Prime.
Yeah, and I seem to waver. Sometimes I'll be on Netflix on a Netflix kick for a while, watching documentaries there, and then I run out of good ones to watch there, and then sometimes I'll switch over to Amazon and see about getting a trial through them and see what stuff's available through that that streaming provider. But looking at this past weekend's, Kartik, the Premier League, we haven't talked about the Premier League yet. What was your take on the coverage? Because we covered this in a lot of detail in the first episode last week, Christian Pulisic, and kind of the really kind of overdone focus on him. But how was it for you in the second weekend?
It was the same. I mean, it was the promotions were all about Pulisic. So much of the talk was all about Pulisic. Now, he had the sort of match that he had a lot of at Dortmund last season. Again, people would criticize me for my analysis of Pulisic. I wouldn't even call it criticism. And last season, when they were not watching Dortmund play the way I was, and there was a reason he wasn't regularly starting for them. And there's all kinds of spin, even this past week, people telling me, oh, well, when he started at the end of the season, they almost won the title. Well, yeah, but they were ahead in the table when he wasn't starting, right? And the critical match where they started to give away points was the match where Favre, their manager, rotated him in and sat Sancho and Royce. Rotated him and Brun Larsen in, and it was a disaster. But that's neither here nor there. Point is, same thing leading up to that Chelsea match. He played very poorly, according to most people, in that match. Now, I would say that was a Pulisic performance. I don't think that it was extraordinarily bad as some people say it was, because I've seen that before. I saw that much of last season. Again, I watched Dortmund. Most of the people who are lauding him did not. So post-match, very little conversation about him. Monday, they have Wolves and Manchester United, and it's Ahmed Farid, Musto, and Earl, and we never hear Pulisic's name for an hour in pregame. So maybe they're moving on.
I thought it was much, much better. The first week, I was not as appalled as you were, although I was pretty upset with the first week's coverage. Second week, I didn't think it was, this past weekend, I didn't think it was too bad. Like, for example, the Chelsea-Leicester game, I really appreciated that the halftime analysis was mostly focused on Mason Mount, and deservedly so. I mean, that was, again, 2 weeks in a row that he's had great performances, and I thought they did well in not trying to go overboard with Pulisic. He had a good game, definitely, but now the advertising is a whole different story in terms of promotion and the ads that they're running, which is, I'm sure, a completely separate department that has nothing to do with the TV production editorial side. And in that, I mean, at the end of the day, they're trying to generate as much viewership as possible. And when we get to the TV ratings, we'll talk about whether that's having an impact. They're just trying to sell him as, I mean, one of the main stories to get people to watch the games. That does bother me. I mean, especially when you're kind of promoing, you mean, a big game in the weekend, and his face is splattered over everything. Right. That bothers me from an advertising perspective. I do understand what they're trying to do, but I just don't like it.
A couple points here. It also bothers me from an American perspective, because we have had lots of good American players in the Premier League. I know I took a real beating a couple of weeks ago when I said we've had outside of the EU, we've had one of the biggest impacts in the Premier League, along with Argentina, Nigeria, Australia, etc. Obviously, a lot of people don't like American players or stereotype American players, so they thought that was ridiculous. But we really have, particularly 10 years ago, right, when you had the Dempseys and the McBrides and the Bocanegras and etc. Right. Yeah. You could go on, Claudio Reyna in the league. But the last few years we've had DeAndre Yedlin did move to Tottenham. He didn't work out there, although he has become a regular Premier League player at other clubs since. There hasn't been this sort of attention on him. Matt Miazga did start a few Premier League matches for Chelsea immediately after he transferred from MLS, the same exact club. There wasn't this sort of focus on him. Now, he had a horrible match against Swansea, which I'm sure you remember well, and he hasn't played since. But he did start that match and came out at halftime. So that bothers me. Now, back to the studio, I want to give huge props to Ravi Musto for halftime of Chelsea-Leicester, because at the time, remember, Chelsea were all over Leicester for the first 25 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then it seemed like the guys like Mount and Pulisic, particularly the younger players, had run themselves ragged in that first half. Musto made the observation at halftime, the last 15 minutes or so from Chelsea, he didn't think they were as sharp. He didn't think they showed as much energy. This wasn't as obvious to viewers, to a lot of viewers, and to people on Twitter at the very same time. And that if they don't regain that in the second half, Leicester's going to get something from the match. And he was spot on. So that's the kind of analysis we've gotten used to hearing from NBC. And I'm glad Musto brought that back into the picture at halftime of this match, instead of us talking about Pulisic or talking about Paul Pogba. You know, they've just focused on these sort of sensational headlines the first few weeks.
And that's been the key. One of the keys to the success of NBC Sports has been the analysis. I mean, that's the reason that we keep on coming back. I mean, you and I, Kartik, don't have to tune in pre-match early or wake up early on a Saturday morning or a Sunday morning to watch this analysis. But we do, because there's a reason for it. For the most part, it's usually we almost always learn something from it, or there's some insight, or Neil Ashton comes on board and gives us a scoop about something. There's a reason to watch. But if it is so focused on one player, and I mean, how much more can you say about one player in such a beginning of the season? It's a turnoff. I'm not a Chelsea fan. by any means, but it doesn't matter. I'm watching this because I want to know what's happening. I want to enhance my appreciation of the teams and the clubs and the game that I'm watching. I don't want it to be focused on one player.
Yeah.
And I guess it's almost like a gateway drug. They're hoping that they bring people in on this, and then hopefully maybe we saw in the second week. Hopefully this good analysis that we've been used to since 2013 will continue, and that's where they focus most of their efforts on.
Yeah, let me say this. I mean, I am a Pulisic fan. I've been critical of him, or have been an analytical about him, because I thought he dropped off at Dortmund last season. Was at 20 he hasn't been as strong as he was at 18, in my opinion, as a player. But that happens with guys as they progress. You know, and his former teammate Ousmane Dembele is worse at 21 than he was at 18 from Barcelona. You saw that on Friday. But my point is, I think all of this pressure being put on Pulisic is bad for him. I think there is no way he can meet the level of expectation NBC and a lot of American soccer fans are putting on him. It is a landmark that he has gone to a club like Chelsea. You know, we had Oguchi Onyewu go to AC Milan. I was so excited that morning. I think you remember that, Chris, 10 years ago when he signed with Milan, and then he got hurt right away. All of us, myself included, I learned from that. I put a lot of pressure on him saying, this is great. We're going to have a guy at one of the top clubs in Serie A, Champions League. This was at a time when Milan was a lot bigger than they are now. They just won the Champions League, by the way, a year earlier. So, or 2 years earlier, and were consistently in Champions League finals and semifinals at that point. And it ruined his career. So I'm cognizant of that at 20, he's about to be 21, Christian Pulisic has to be there has to be some reason and some nuance around him. And we can't get carried away because, like I said, people thought he was horrible on Sunday. I thought that was a typical performance from what I saw last season at Dortmund. He would take guys on. He'd do okay on the dribble. He'd do okay in possession. But then there were times he'd give the ball away. And then out of possession, he's perennially positioned wrong. And there were huge gaps between Chelsea's midfield and Chelsea's defensive line, which opened things up for Leicester. That's just a typical performance. So I wasn't overly critical. And it's because people's expectations have been built up to this being, you know, I don't know, the American Maradona or something, that they were very unhappy with his play on Sunday. So I think you're doing the player also a disservice.
Yeah, it could come back to haunt NBC Sports if they build him up into, I mean, I guess, again, all the advertising, the promos. I mean, any ad you see for NBC's coverage of the Premier League now pretty much always has his face on it, is that for the mainstream who don't know, who come in on this and expect this to be the next great American player, and he is a great player, but even kind of on the highest pedestal, it could actually be a kind of a slap in the face too if those performances don't meet their expectations, which is unfair on Christian. And that's something that hopefully, I mean, it looks like NBC has tempered that over analysis and over infatuation. And again, I think we'll have to wait and see and continue throughout this season. This Saturday, it's the opening game. It's Norwich against Chelsea on a Saturday morning, early kickoff. So we shall see. We'll see what they do and how they focus on the clubs and individual players and performances. Hopefully it'll be focused more on the performances, and whoever kind of rises up will be focused on rather than just one player. All right, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news. And this first piece of news is interesting because I haven't heard much about it being covered by anyone.
Yeah, so ESPN has signed an exclusive multimedia agreement for worldwide rights to the NWSL's regular season matches. So this includes streaming, et cetera, which has been on Yahoo Sports, and then prior to that was on Copa 90, which was part of Verizon, correct? So this was announced last week by the NWSL, and there just has not been that much discussion or coverage of it.
Yeah, it's strange too, because even the NWSL deal that ESPN did with in the United States, so when they announced that they were going to be broadcasting many of the games from now to the end of the season, that was done on, I think it was July 4th. It was on a holiday weekend. The news, I think the Equalizer broke the news on July 4th, and then they had to put out a press release, probably the worst possible time any time of the year, especially the end of the week also too, on top of that, to issue a news announcement. And here we go with this news too. I mean, it's positive. I mean, hopefully this will help the NWSL globally in terms of greater, you know, I guess, awareness of the league. But again, it was kind of flew under the radar, which is why I wanted to be sure to include it. Next up in the news, beIN Sports has announced the addition of Magisterial to its programming lineup. The primetime show will feature Ray Hudson with former Canadian national soccer team footballer Kaelin Kyle and a weekly guest from the soccer and entertainment world. I think the first week's episode had Thomas Rongan on it. The national show will be televised every Monday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern on beIN Sports and will be supplemented by a podcast called Magisterial, the podcast. Now, I believe this is replacing The Locker Room in English, which was every Monday on beIN Sports, Monday nights, and usually would have Kay Murray and Ray and sometimes Gary Bailey or Thomas Rongan and some others. The Locker Room will continue in Spanish, but it looks like they've made some moves here to drop that show from the English side and then add this Ray Hudson show. All right, Kartik, big week this week coming up.
Yeah, Serie A starts this weekend. The final of the major European leagues to start, of the big five European leagues, as we call them, starts this weekend on the ESPN family of networks. Matteo Benetti and Mark Donaldson will be commenting on Parma, Juve, and then Roma, Genoa. Both are interesting matches. And unfortunately, with these are two of the best in the business, Matteo and Mark. Hopefully the Juve game doesn't get consumed with Neymar talk. And the potential Neymar going there. Just want to point out ESPN FC all week, as they give analysis to other topics, it has been consumed by Neymar. So yeah. He's certainly looming large on everything going on at the big clubs in Europe.
Yeah, and today it's Thursday. We're recording this podcast, and the talk today or this morning so far has been talking about perhaps going to Real Madrid. So maybe if they focus on the Real Madrid side angle, they won't have to kind of talk about the Juve angle there. But it's just it's a circus for sure.
Right.
So some news that is in related to ESPN Plus is that we've talked about this on the podcast before, but Disney Plus, the launch date has been confirmed for globally, actually in the US, November the 12th. So remember that the $12.99 offer that we mentioned in the US will be for Disney Plus, ESPN Plus, and Hulu all bundled together. No word yet, though, on the upgrade pricing. So if you have ESPN Plus currently for the $4.95 a month, how much extra it'll cost to get the Disney Plus Hulu added and bundled all together. But for now, that's just a heads up. November 12th is the actual launch date, and I'm sure we'll have more news in the weeks running up to that about how that'll work. The other thing, Kartik, is that AT&T TV Now, which is the renamed DirecTV Now, has launched their pricing models and also what channels they offer. We've got a page on worldsoccertalk.com that goes into a lot more detail that has all the listings for AT&T TV Now. But the big news is that, not surprisingly, there's no beIN Sports. I mean, still, DirecTV does not have a deal with beIN Sports. And if a deal is signed in the future, which I hear there's rumblings that a deal could be possible, that then hopefully then the other AT&Ts, such as AT&T TV Now and UVerse, etc., will go ahead and add beIN Sports back on. But the pricing on this AT&T TV Now, which is their streaming service, is crazy. I mean, the top tier package they have is, this is just streaming, $135 a month, $135 a month. That's their ultimate package. They've got another one that's $124 a month, another one that's $110 a month. It almost seems with AT&T, in terms of if you're a DirecTV customer and you call up DirecTV and say, hey, I'm getting ready, I want to cancel my DirecTV subscription service through a satellite, it's just too expensive. And the person on the phone might say, oh, well, if you want to, we've got some streaming packages available, would you be interested in that? And probably the person's going to say, yeah, I want to cut the cord and go streaming. Once they kind of share some of these prices about how much it costs, they might say, you know what, I'm going to stick with DirecTV. Actually, the value is probably, you know, maybe I pay about the same amount of money, maybe a little bit more, but I can keep my satellite dish and keep all these channels, and I'll have to go through and pick and choose from these different packages and pay what seems to be less value for fewer channels. That's the take I get on it, is just basically that AT&T is trying to control the experience, the customer experience, and scare them away from streaming in order to keep them on DirecTV. That's my take on it, but those prices are absolutely scandalous. All right, let's move on to TV ratings, Kartik. A lot to take in and some interesting ones. So let's take a look at those right now. So the big one, Kartik, would be from this past weekend was Club America against Morelia, Monarcas Morelia in Liga MX across the Univision channels. This one, 1.2 million viewers watched this one on Saturday night. And also Saturday was the Spurs match and on NBC. And this one was, of course, the Man City Spurs game. 1.04 million people watched this one on NBC. We don't have the viewing numbers for the Spanish language side yet. Club Leon against Chivas on the Univision channels again. 984,000 viewers there. So I've got a long list of all of them, the actual TV ratings. Again, we'll have them at worldsoccertalk.com that goes into more detail. A few things to throw out there. Christian Pulisic, in terms of the comparison for week number two. So week number one was a difficult one to kind of really look at and to see how much of an impact that viewing number had, because the opposition was Manchester United, which has historically been the best supported or best watched game on club on NBC Sports over the history of them broadcasting soccer. Since 2013. But this one, I went back to the same weekend last year, so the second game week, and then I looked at that game that was on at the same time, and that was Brighton against Man United. So a comparison between Chelsea and Leicester and Brighton and Manchester United, and the broadcast, the viewership change was that the Chelsea-Leicester game featuring Christian Pulisic had an increase of viewership of about 20%. And that I can see. I can see that being very plausible. People tuning into a Chelsea-Leicester game probably maybe more likely just because he's playing and you've got a 20% bump. So that's good. For the second week in a row, though...
We even saw a bump...
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say we even saw a bump for a few weeks in Newcastle matches last season after Miguel Almiron went from Atlanta United. Remember,
yeah.
I remember mentioning that on the show that there was a bump. So I think there's this curiosity factor the first few weeks.
Yeah.
And now Almiron has been at Newcastle for 8 months. There was not as much interest from Atlanta United fans. I don't know if that'll happen with Pulisic eventually. Maybe, maybe not.
Yeah, I guess. And again, too, a lot of it's based on playing time, too, to see how much, is he going to start every game? I mean, Williams, an adequate replacement in many ways and can add, he's a free kick specialist. He can definitely add a different dynamic. So I think
when Hudson Odoi comes back, I don't know how much Pulisic will play. I mean, but that's still a ways away.
Yeah.
But he's going to have to improve because I think Callum Hudson-Odoi, although we don't know how Hudson-Odoi is going to come back, if he's going to look as sharp as he did before that injury. But that's potentially the same sort of thing he had with Sancho at Borussia Dortmund, where there's just an Englishman who is a little more seasoned, a younger Englishman to him that is sharper and more incisive and better positional sense that takes his spot, just like what happened at Dortmund with Jadon Sancho.
Now, for the second week in a row, one of the biggest talking points in this section about TV ratings has been Sheffield United. In the first week, we talked about them because... Sheffield United's match against, Bournemouth, I think, actually had twice as many viewers as the two MLS games, the two biggest MLS games that weekend. Now, for the second week in a row, newly promoted Sheffield United, this time were watched by more than twice as many viewers as a major MLS game on US TV this past Sunday, which was the late game. I think it was the Portland-Atlanta game, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
And I mean, what are your thoughts on this, Kartik? Is this just a coincidence? Is this what would be a reason for somebody tuning in to watch a Sheffield United Crystal Palace game on a Sunday morning at 9 o'clock in the morning, and that game have more viewership than a game that would be on at 10 p.m. Eastern time? I mean, 7 p.m. Pacific prime time for the West Coast, featuring two of the most popular teams in terms of fan bases in the United States, Portland and Atlanta.
Yeah, first off, I watched both these matches, so I can speak to it. Atlanta, Portland, there's a lot of criticism from, I guess, stylists about DeBoer, who loved the previous coach Martino in Atlanta. But Atlanta is fine for me to watch. Portland, I worked with Gio Savarese, love the guy in NASL, but his teams are very, when they're bad, they're very difficult to watch. And I fell asleep during this match. And that was because of Portland. That was not because of Atlanta. So it was late and it was tough to pay attention, to be honest with you. Right. Now, and I love Gio, don't get me wrong. It's just the style of football that his teams have always played, going back to the Cosmos, is sometimes when they're off, they're tough to watch. And then this game, Sheffield United, there's something very entertaining about the way they play. This inverted center back concept, the free-flowing nature of how they're playing under Chris Wilder, how they attack. They've kept their team from the championship intact. They've added Ollie McBurney, obviously a player you're very familiar with, is going to be an exciting player for them. So I don't know if there's interest because they were newly promoted or if it's some sort of coincidence, because I don't think anyone is interested in watching Crystal Palace this season. I'm just going to say that. I think they – I've been talking with friends. This is a team, unless they get it on track, this is a team that could have one of the historic low point figures for a season, maybe 20 points this season. They're that bad, with Zaha not plugged in. So it couldn't be for Palace. And Bournemouth, like I said, I'm entertained by Bournemouth, and I like watching them the previous week. But I think there was more interest in Sheffield United as a newly promoted team in that match. And then there were people who watched that match who said, you know, they were fun to watch. They play a different style of football. They play a style of football no one else plays in English football, with the way they use their back line. Yep. And the way their central midfielders play as well. This is a tactical show, so I don't have time to explain it. But what I think, there's a significant amount of curiosity because of the way they play, their English core, they're newly promoted, and that way they play is very entertaining. So I'm guessing it has to do with them more than the opposition. I don't think anyone wants to watch Palace, quite frankly. I think that they're going to be down this entire season. So I give Sheffield United credit. This is what promotion and relegation does, is new teams, new faces, new styles of play that ultimately draws fans who are curious to watch them.
There is definitely an element of the promoted teams. I mean, Aston Villa, you talked about in the first segment, and they're an exciting team to watch. I mean, a lot of young players, a lot of different energy. And say, watching that club and watching a Sheffield United, they add a lot of variety and spontaneity to the league. And I'm not missing Fulham going down. I mean, it adds some life to the Premier League, and actually inject Norwich City. I mean, it's been a perfect example with Pukki.
Yeah.
Pukki was fantastic last season. I picked him to be on my FPL team this season. He's done
me too
marvelously well, because we know what type of player he is. But even the style of that football club, I mean, that adds a lot of sparkle to your enjoyment of the game. So it adds a different element to go, okay, all right, this season there's going to be some new story points or some new teams I'm going to watch more closely. I think it's a coincidence, though, in terms of Sheffield United. Nothing against Sheffield United. I mean, it's a good team. Chris Wilder's doing a fantastic job. NBC Sports, with the two Robbies, did a great analysis piece about talking about their overlapping centre-backs, I think pre-game, and really zeroed in on how revolutionary this method was. But I think it's a coincidence, because at the end of the day, if you have any Premier League game on, so whether it's 9 o'clock in the morning, whether it's early kickoff at 7 o'clock in the morning, if it's noon, if it's 10 p.m. Eastern time, if they find some magic way to adjust the time zones where we're watching Premier League matches at 10 p.m. Eastern time, those games are going to do better than Major League Soccer, no matter what time Major League Soccer games are on. And it's because, to me, it's all about relevancy. These games matter. There's a reason that people are tuning in to watch these games. Sometimes it may not be in terms of the technical ability or the technical what's on the pitch itself. It means that these games matter. Every single game, if this team goes down, you mean talk about Crystal Palace, that'd be a horrible season for them in terms of the implications of that. And with Zaha, you know that they'll be fighting throughout the year to try to stay up, and it's going to be some great entertainment watching that team. With Major League Soccer, I mean, we're in, almost late August. And yes, now the games are starting to heat up and starting to matter more. But where has this been since March? And there's really less of a reason to tune in and say, okay, I have to tune in at 10 p.m. Eastern to watch this game. And yes, it's late if you go to work on a Monday morning. But what I'm saying is that, again, it could be the Premier League and it could be any time. People will find a way, will do whatever it takes to sit down and watch that game if it matters. And it does matter. And that's the thing with Major League Soccer and a lot of the fanboys, especially, is they zero in on the time and say, "Wow, of course, like Saturday mornings is a much better time for soccer games, or Sunday mornings is a much better time for soccer games." And it is that way for a lot of reasons for a lot of people because they've made it that way. You mean, if you took the Premier League out of this picture, out of the equation, sat down with a blank piece of paper and said, okay, if I was to try to figure out the best times to have games scheduled where I'm going to attract the most viewership for games, I mean, for soccer fans from around the country, nationally, I'd say it's prime time. A prime time Saturday night game, a prime time Sunday night game, maybe a doubleheader on a Sunday afternoon. Those are the perfect times, and Major League Soccer has that. But then now that they have that and they've had it for a long time, it's not working. So they're like, oh, okay, well, maybe we should have games at this time or maybe we should have a game of the week. And they've done that. They've had the Thursday night game of the week. They had the Friday night game of the week. They've had the Saturday game of the week. They've tried all the possible things possible to make the TV ratings work, and they're not working. They're plateauing, and maybe there's a little bit of growth on the Spanish side. And there's a little bit of growth on the over-the-air Fox side. But as last season, as we saw, ESPN TV ratings were down, FS1 TV ratings were down. And there's a reason for that. And as much as I would love Sheffield United to do really well, I think it's just more of a coincidence. But it is a good talking point. And that's the reason why I've raised it on social media and different places to make people aware of it, is that there's a reason behind this. And again, if I'm Major League Soccer headquarters, I'm worrying about this. If I'm looking at the next TV contract and I'm one of the big broadcasters, I'm worrying about this. Why is it happening the way it is? And to me, it all comes down to the structure of the league, the way that the playoff system, the calendar, the problems that Major League Soccer have are a huge amount of problems. They're structural problems. They're some of the most important problems within the game itself. And they keep on adding on more teams. St. Louis this week, more expansion teams, more money pouring in, more stadium deals. And those are not fixing the issue. It's just compounding the issue. So I really feel at some point, hopefully,
and they're never even willing to acknowledge any of the issues. So,
right.
I was struck by Alex Morgan, following winning the World Cup, made a criticism of the pay-to-play system and how youth soccer is structured in the U.S. Garber is asked about it directly by our friend Steve Renner. Writes for The Guardian here in South Florida, based here in South Florida, here in the Fort Lauderdale area. And Garber's response is, oh, she must not know what's going on in the men's game. She's talking, must be the way it is in the women's game. Are you kidding me? Right? I mean, it was, that's quote, because I had read and heard what Alex Morgan had said. And when asked about it by Brenner, Garber gave this, I just myopic response when there has been so much conversation about the pay-to-play system and the academy system. And also, this comes right after the MLS academies have essentially, and USSF have snaked the other DAs and made the problem much worse. So they're living in some sort of, at least their executives are living in some sort of alternate reality. So I don't know if they would acknowledge the problems with television ratings anymore. At one time, they did. At one time, they were very honest with us and very candid with us. This is the biggest problem we have. We need to get these numbers up. Now I think you have the litany of excuses, which is this is always based on just these sort of counterintuitive arguments. Because if you lay them all on a piece of paper, all the arguments they make about why their TV ratings are the way they are, they tend to contradict one another. If you take them individually, maybe they make you might give them some credence, but then when you put them all against one another, you realize they're just throwing whatever sticks against the wall.
And that's the reason too that I mean Sheffield United is one example. It's a litmus test to look at. It's kind of the real way to look at the value of a league or a value of TV ratings, because there's no outside influences. The numbers measure what people are watching. So when you have a Sheffield United, a club that most Americans probably don't know much about until this season. I mean, most soccer fans, diehards, yes, of course, but most fans would not. And those teams are getting twice as many viewership as Major League Soccer teams. They've been around for quite some time. They've built up a good fan base. There's a problem there. And again, I just wanted to mention that, and that's one of the reasons why I think that the TV ratings are so important. Next up is an interview that we have with Juan Carlos Rodriguez, who is the head of TUDN, the brand new renamed soccer sports-centric channel. They used to be known as Univision Deportes Network. It's rebranded, has a new look and feel, has a partnership with Televisa, one of the biggest broadcasters in Mexico, and has more of a focus on Liga MX, but also, of course, as we learned last season, picking up the rights to the UEFA Champions League in Spanish, UEFA Europa League, and much, much more. So this past week, I had a chance to sit down and conduct an interview with Juan Carlos. I asked him a lot about TUDN in terms of where it's heading and what the vision is. I also focused in on a couple of key points, and that talks about the Bundesliga and the relationship with Bundesliga. Right now, they have their Spanish language rights, and knowing that it looks likely that ESPN Plus has picked up the English language rights, the likelihood that Univision and TUDN would be interested in the Spanish language rights to that league for the future, as well as talking about Chivas TV, which is the streaming product that currently has the rights to home Chivas games in Liga MX, and whether or not Univision and TUDN would be interested in those rights and where those discussions are, plus much, much more. So it's a good glimpse at the Spanish language side of the soccer viewing experience in the United States, which has big implications. Univision, out of all of the broadcasters in the United States, no matter what language, Univision broadcasts more soccer than any other network. And also, it's, at the end of the day, has the greatest number of viewing figures when you look at the kind of as a lump sum. So they're a big player, and hopefully you'll enjoy this interview with Juan Carlos Rodriguez. Yeah, so the first question I have is about TUDN. What is the vision for the channel? I mean, obviously it's a new name, it's a new logo. It seems refreshing, but what changes can soccer fans expect from the new partnership and the new network?
It was a natural evolution for the network, because the more relevant soccer becomes in the U.S., the more relevant Liga MX will become in the U.S. Even though we are incredibly proud of our partnership with the MLS and super fond of it and happy about it and proud about it, Liga MX has taken a very interesting role for the future, because by having these games on primetime on weekends, we believe that a huge volume of soccer will be driven by Liga MX, regardless of language. Having said this, for us it was a natural evolution to try to put together the best of Mexico and the best of our Mexican side and get it going from various point of views. The best talent, the best technology, the best properties, the best reporters, the best reporters at site, the best production team, the best production skills. And so it made a lot of sense. This is not a merge at all. This is a consolidation and a collaboration of two entities that are that have the same interest and goal to broadcast and amplify the message of Liga MX Soccer in the U.S. and in Mexico. So it made all the sense in the world.
So would you say that there's a difference between the way that Liga MX is produced and televised in Mexico versus Liga MX in the United States, historically speaking? Is there a difference between the way that the leagues are carried?
It's the same that happens with the EPL. When NBC goes into the EPL, it's like a very close friend, but it's a foreigner that it's part of the ongoing situation. But you never stop being a foreigner. While when you're part of the real thing and you're outside, then it's a lot easier to flow into the mood of what this is. So we have all reporters at site. We are more relevant with our reporters at each of the teams. We are more relevant with the players and the coaches. We are more relative with the managers. So it's a better in-depth access that we are granting by doing this.
Mm-hmm. So for the viewers, for the soccer fans, whether they speak English or they speak Spanish or whatever it may be, that they're it's enhancing the coverage of Liga MX. What about home games for Chivas and also San Luis?
So in the specific case of Chivas, we publicly said it more than a year ago that we did not have plans to continue under the same terms, but we are still in negotiations with Chivas to see if we can find a long-term partnership. We are, as you know very well aware, we've been building relationships with teams for long-term, and we want to continue with these long-term views. And we love the Chivas family, we love the Vergara family, but at this point they are looking for a shorter term and we're looking for longer-term relationships that might not help us to have a smooth path to an agreement. We are definitely interested in having a long-term relationship with them and keep building the very important Chivas name into this market.
And what about San Luis, the newly promoted team to Liga MX? It seems that they don't have a broadcaster for the home games, as far as I know.
For them specifically, we have a very close relationship with Miguel Angel, the Spanish owner, and we'd love to be their home here, but there are a lot of details that need to be addressed before we come to an agreement.
Okay. What about...
We have...
Go ahead.
Way more interest in Chivas today than in San Luis.
Sure. What about the English language experience of watching Liga MX? Any changes this season? Will games? I know in previous years you've had partnerships with Fubo TV and I think on Twitter also. But where can listeners who maybe don't speak Spanish perhaps and just want to have English language broadcast of select Liga MX games? Where would they be able to find those?
The first game day of Champions League, we're launching 2DN Extra, which will be our digital play that will be aggregating all of the games in English. And in partnership with our MVPDs and all of our distributors, we will give access to our audiences in partnership with the distributors to the DN Extra so that they can digitally access and be able to see all of the relevant content that we're creating in English, both games and short-term content, short-form content, and also all of the overlapping games that we have out of our linear networks. So to give you an example, a lot of Champions League games will be broadcasted in this property, as long as... And also, we will create Zona Football, which is going to be like the red zone of the NFL for soccer-dash European Soccer - Champions League that we will be broadcasting through TUDN Extra. So TUDN Extra will be we're very proud and very happy to be launching that.
Okay.
In the next few weeks.
And that would be then where they can watch Liga MX in English also for some of the games?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. So what about the Champions League? I mean, last season was the debut season, of course, Europa League 2, as well as some other UEFA properties. Did it exceed your expectations? I mean, what was the feedback from, whether it's from advertisers or from partners, in terms of how it went? And will there be any additional changes or anything different for this coming season?
Yes. So lot of learnings from last year's, even though we've been doing soccer and we produce most of the soccer impressions in this country, both at on our on day basis and on prime time. The learning that we did last year, which was our first year, there's a lot of those, and what that means is we're gonna be not doing the same little mistake that we did in the past. We had all these learnings that became opportunities that we're seizing. And to give you an example, we're sending Christo Stoikov and Cristina Romero to create hundreds of pieces of short and long form content out of Europe with the access that we get through Christo and the on match way of doing things by Cristina, in which we will be delivering on top of the games a lot of the short and long form content that is being required both by fans and by our sponsors.
So the short form content is that something where I mean this is a Spanish language audience that is not used to watching Champions League football on Univision and all the networks associated with it. Is that something where it's almost like a learning curve, talking about the history of some of these clubs that may not be as well known in
both histories and both short form of the interviews that Christo will have with Mourinho or with Pep, or Christo is an incredible concierge key to open magical doors in Europe.
Yeah. Definitely one of the greats of the game, and somebody who's definitely a scholar, Christo especially. But what about? I mean, it's been probably a different summer in many ways for Univision in terms of not having the Women's World Cup rights and some of the bigger tournaments that we've been used to kind of watching on Univision, and at the same time too in the past few weeks and actually a few days there's been La Liga signing a new deal with beIN Sports. There's been talk about the Bundesliga perhaps signing a deal with ESPN Plus. But in each of these conversations or negotiations, we're not hearing the name Univision as much. Is there a change in philosophy, or is it that maybe there's more things to come that might happen where Univision might be involved or interested in acquiring more soccer rights?
No, I think we have a very robust portfolio across every 4 years. Our challenge with the FIFA events is that they did a deal with our competitor, and we're happy to be where we are, because as we have said historically, we're in the business of making money and giving value to our owners. And the prices for the properties that are FIFA properties today in the U.S. do not allow us to make money. So that's very clear. Number two, we are incredibly proud of the work they did for the Women's World Cup, because they are elevating the game. And we are in the business of elevating the soccer, both in men's and women's, and we're incredibly proud of what they did. And that puts us in a very unique position. We just created Lunes de Estrellas, which stands for Mondays of Stars. And Mondays of Stars, it's a one or two primetime games that will be broadcasted in both cable networks, both in Mexico and in the U.S., of Liga MX Women's League. It will be produced by women. It will be anchored and tailored by women. and we are very, very proud about it. We're in the process. It was already launched, soft launched a couple of weeks ago, but we're very proud about it, and we will continue to make some noise once we get it. The beauty of soccer is that the dates are set and we have to jump into things, but with the incredible success of women's soccer in America, we just jumped into that opportunity. So we eventually are going to bundle Liga MX soccer with the U.S. national team women's soccer, with the Mexican national team soccer, and other properties that we will try to acquire. We are strong believers on women's soccer in America could become a very good potential of growth for businesses and sponsors and fans. So we need to support it and push and make it happen.
Yeah, that's exciting. It's good to hear too. And actually, the TV ratings for a lot of the women's games too have been impressive too on Univision when they've been aired on there. I mean, coming up pretty soon, you're going to have the next some TV deal with the U.S. women's national team, the U.S. men's national team, Major League Soccer, and I think Don Garber's talked about in the past adding more things to that package to make it more valuable. Is that something that...
Our term expires on 22, so hopefully it's going to be far from now.
Right, exactly.
Hopefully it's going to be my grandchildren doing those conversations.
Okay. Any plans to retire soon, or it's just far away?
No, it's a couple of years at least.
Yeah, right, that's
no
true.
There's no need to have that discussion.
Yeah, I was just wondering if any conversations have started, because in terms of, you mean, not negotiations, but in terms of what that package may entail?
Not on our end, not yet.
Not yet. Okay.
We haven't heard anything.
And then the Bundesliga. I mean, you have the Bundes Goal Show, which, as far as I know, is the only show on U.S. television that is a Bundesliga highlights show. That's, I mean, definitely recommended for viewers to watch that. As far as you understand,
we love our friends from the Bundesliga in many ways. They are an incredibly professional group of executives. Their product is very valuable. I believe it's a bit underestimated across the markets, but real core soccer fans, we should all view more Bundesliga because it's a very good property.
Yeah, and the television production is fantastic in terms of the use of cameras and everything that they supply to the different broadcasters in terms of access. And
they're very, very good at what they do. Incredibly professional.
Absolutely. As far as you understand it, is this the final year of the agreement between Univision and the Bundesliga, and then they move on to ESPN?
So for that we can tell you that we are in the process of discussions.
Okay, excellent. That's good news. So as far as all the changes that have happened with to DNA, any new talent, any new people coming on board, any changes in that regard?
We're missing one person. I'm not going to tell you the name because we haven't done the deal yet, but we're meeting one person, one very relevant from our industry that we're trying to move to our roster. After that, I think we're all set for the next few years to continue being the super leaders in our sector.
So the kind of basically the last question I have is about TV rights. Is that, I mean, when I speak to ESPN or ESPN Deportes or speak to Telemundo or other channels, other networks, the same conversation is had where there are, and you mentioned it briefly in terms of rights fees, in terms of the value, the price, the expectation of those rights fees continues to increase into almost extortionate levels where it is very difficult for broadcasters to try to figure out a way to actually break even, to make a profit, which goes against the whole concept of acquiring rights and then broadcasting that channel or that league. Is that something? I mean, do you think we're in a bubble? Do you think those numbers, those value will come down eventually as people are cord cutting and there's yes, there's demand for live sports, but it must put you and other executives in a difficult position where, you mean, those rights fees are extremely expensive.
Yeah, let me give you some thoughts on that. I believe the rationality of acquiring rights, it's putting the industry in a point in which it seems like they shouldn't be growing more. However, due to the new platforms and the new consumption habits and the new opportunities ahead of us, there is someone who is willing to disrupt the market with a strategic approach. So being rational and being strategic, which is strategic in our world, means I'm willing to pay more than what it's valued because it's relevant for me for whatever reason. As long as that keeps going, and it will continue to happen, we're going to see the prices still up. So even though they are not rationally up, they're going to continue to keep growing because of the strategic value of having some specific rights and make business out of that. So I don't know if I went around your question or I'm addressing it, but the answer is they will continue to keep growing regardless of the rationality of a regular business model.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, there is such a demand for it, and sometimes broadcasters are willing to pay extra just to, you know, put themselves on the map or to make a statement. And then, it seems to be that they're expecting losses, but it's, the one example I think of too is going back to on the English language side is NBCSN, and before NBCSN they were what, Versus, and then before that they were Outdoor Channel. Very few people knew who they were until they acquired the Premier League rights in 2013. Those rights have been increasing larger and larger, but on the English language side, they put themselves on the map, and now I think people know who that channel is. And that's just one example. There's many other examples out there. Juan Carlos, anything else that we didn't cover that you want to mention? I know that there's been discussion in the press about a private sale possibility. I'm guessing you probably can't talk much about that, but anything else that we haven't covered that you do want to mention?
That piece I can't comment on the rights. The last thing I would say is, and you asked me and I didn't answer before, was on La Liga. La Liga is a very good example of that. La Liga's result of where they stand today, it's aligning interest of people that believe that the value for those rights is higher than what we can see from our point of view. Therefore, we don't have access to pay for those rights.
All right, let's move on to listener mailbag. First up is Yannick Ramke. He says, congrats for your reporting on the beIN Sports La Liga deal this past week. I also agree that it's a surprise that this has to be viewed in the grander scheme of their partnership. Anyways, I'm hearing that the Middle East and North Africa is still massively problematic for beIN Sports. People who work with a few companies in the media space say it's in the region, say it's a disaster area at the moment. The economy, piracy, the spat with Saudi Arabia has driven pay TV into the ground. There are rumors that beIN Sports may not necessarily be around for a long time, given Turkey issues, Spain pullout, problems in the Middle East and North Africa, US carriage spats, etc. Although this is just a rumor, but not great developments, to be honest. And those are great points there by Yannick, because beIN Sports is looked at as a global media player, but piracy is a major issue that could really, which has hurt beIN Sports, but in terms of it could possibly devalue the rights fees out there and create a whole host of other problems. But they're definitely going through some issues there. Hopefully they'll be fine, but everything is not roses around the world. Next up is Nash Rambler. Relevant Sports was briefly mentioned in the last podcast. My understanding from you and the others that was reported was that Relevant Sports had been hired by La Liga to negotiate the next US television rights deal, or at least be heavily involved in consulting and advising La Liga in the next US TV deal. I have to conclude that La Liga have completely ignored any advice they were getting from Relevant Sports. Unless there is a sublicensing deal, continuing with beIN means that for most Americans, their only chance to see a live TV broadcast of Messi playing in a competitive match for Barcelona will be on a Saturday, or will be on Saturdays when Barcelona makes it to the Champions League final. So some good points there by Nash Rambler. I think it's one of those things that, yes, the deal that was done with Relevant Sports, where they did a partnership for the next 14 years, I think it's 14 or 13 years, to work closely together to go ahead and broker and sell the rights and increase the value of that. I think this was really circumvented completely by the global deal that La Liga and beIN Sports, as we reported last week, that according to one of my sources, did a private deal together. So that takes Relevant Sports completely out of the loop. Relevant Sports would be able to add more value in terms of ticket sales. A lot of the La Liga promotions that they're doing, I'm sure this season we'll hear more about La Liga trying to get one of the official games, the league games played in the United States, as well as maybe partnering with ICC and doing some other events. So there's a lot of work that Relevant Sports has been doing and will be doing, I'm sure, to grow La Liga in the States, as well as this past week too, they launched two new channels on YouTube, on social media. I think it's called La Liga Zone, which they've hired Jimmy Conrad. So he's doing a weekly show taking you into Spain and talking about the history and the stories and the traditions from these clubs. And they also have one on the Spanish language side too. And they both look really well done. So they're definitely doing things behind the scenes. I will agree with Nash Rambler, the two, in terms of their involvement in the TV rights deal and trying to find a bigger, better broadcaster. That didn't work out. But again, at the end of the day, I think money talks, and that fee, whatever beIN Sports paid or offered or promised to La Liga, must have been astronomical. Next up is the original Tom. He says, I disagree with those who feel that MLS should play a winter schedule. One reason that I feel it's overlooked is that a summer schedule shelters the MLS from direct competition and comparison with European club soccer, and thus gives it a window in the marketplace. I like that the MLS Cup final is at a time when there are no other finals being played, the Champions League and the Cup finals, to compare it to, and that the season begins at a different time. It gives us space in the marketplace. Next up is Ken in Utah. Ken says, gentlemen, over this summer I have expressed via Twitter that this podcast has a anti-MLS bias, which you have responded and have denied that there is a bias, and I appreciate that response. Last week, however, Kartik and the Gaffer mentioned how MLS should move to the August-May calendar, which I don't think we did. I mean, we were talking about it, but I don't think that's the solution. But anyway, I disagree with this opinion, but if you would put on your MLS commissioner caps on and address a couple of issues, I may come around to your viewpoint. Issue number one is competition. As a more than casual but less than serious MLS fan, I enjoy watching soccer in the summer. Once college football, basketball, NFL, and NBA start up, my evening viewing priorities shift to those sports. I believe MLS would lose the casual fan by going to a winter schedule. How would you fix this? Do you have the ratings numbers from previous years of MLS in July versus November? All right, so Kartik, before we move on to his next point, let's talk about that for a little bit too, is that out of all of the issues that Major League Soccer has, the calendar is probably one of the most difficult. It's doable. It's possible. From my side personally, I would look at the calendar. I mean, it's such a big country, and there's such a big difference in terms of weather, and there's so many different variables. I would like to see at least looked at almost a similar to Mexico with Liga MX, and having a split season, and maybe having a Southern League where you have most of the teams are in the South, playing into the winter time or the fall time when the weather is decent down here. When you can't play up in Minnesota, you can't play in different places up north because the weather is so bad. And then in the summertime, looking at playing in more of the northern states and having kind of a one schedule, one part of the season that's the southern side that goes into the northern side in the second part of the season. And then having kind of, rather than the East Coast versus West Coast rivalry, having a South versus the North and figuring out a way to do that. I don't know if that's possible, but that's one way to look at it too that doesn't impact... it would impact in terms of when, you mean, baseball's on or NFL, but like you said, Kartik, sometimes maybe it's best to focus on what's best for soccer rather than what's best for not competing against college football. What's your take on that, though, too? I mean, do you think that there's a way... I mean, do you think the August through May calendar, that's the way it should be, or should there be some variations on that?
There could be some variations on it, but I think a large percentage of your audience is... is captured from August to May because they're watching other soccer leagues or they're involved in youth soccer. And especially at the lower division level, I can tell you youth soccer is a disproportionate amount of your paying ticket base. And the clubs I've worked with and the leagues I've worked with struggle over the summer for audience because youth soccer, you can't organize youth soccer groups. Now you can get parents and kids, and maybe you have a little more flexibility because they can stay up later, that sort of thing, particularly with midweek matches. But you can't get an organized group of hundreds of kids and players and coaches to games over the summer. So that's part of my thinking on August, May, in addition to, I think, from a competitive standpoint, in terms of lining up transfer windows and also aligning, and I've talked to many coaches about this, aligning with generally the FIFA calendar for when you want your players peaking to play in internationals, et cetera. It all has a benefit. And I think a big part of the whatever compromise would be made would be around the winter break and how you schedule teams that that are in cold weather climates away from home, maybe in November and February, and you have that break in December or January. And as well, avoiding the constant pitfalls of weather delays or oppressively hot weather in the summer in large portions of the country. I've also been told by coaches, since we're rehashing this, I should say that a lot of them are concerned that, particularly it's getting hotter and hotter in this country, that it's difficult to optimally train your players, particularly young players, to get them up to a certain level for international competitiveness, because we're competing in an international marketplace as the United States, if the bulk of your season are in the hottest months of the year. So your training sessions inevitably are shorter or they're less intense or they get scrubbed completely because of thunderstorms and other extreme weather. Now, obviously you have these concerns in the winter also, but coaches tell me or coaches who are former players have told me, oh, well, you know, it's easier to play in cold weather than it is in warm weather. That's probably true, but you don't want to play in extreme cold weather either. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's no easy answer, but I think there are a lot of reasons for considering the shift.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I think a lot of it depends on what the priorities are. So are you trying to, if you're, I mean, USSF and you're Major League Soccer and you're having discussions about how best to change the calendar to benefit. Okay, so what's the first benefit? Is that attendance? Is that TV ratings? Is that the players in terms of making sure that they're at the maximum peak fitness? Is that to help with the national team and also for the club team? Is that in terms of player sales, transfers, how those all align? There's so many different factors there. So a lot of it is based on the priority. And that has an impact on the schedule. I mean, one of the questions from Ken was, okay, TV ratings from previous years of Major League Soccer, July versus November. November should be the time when those TV ratings go up because there's the playoffs and there's the MLS Cup final and a lot of things happening. The reality is that the TV ratings are usually better in July because there's not much else on television. So more people are watching Major League Soccer when there's, you know, nothing. I mean, baseball's on, yes, but there's no NFL or college football. Ken's second point is weather. He says the weather in northern states like Utah, Minnesota, Ohio, etc. are miserable in December and January. How would you fix this so that attendance wouldn't drop? And for me, I wouldn't be playing games in those states at that time of the year. Again, I would be looking at a schedule that would take best advantage of the teams and where they're located. And you mean Miami in the wintertime would be perfect. That'd be the ultimate place to go ahead and play soccer, as well as you got teams from Orlando, Atlanta, other places too, where the weather's fantastic. Ken goes on to say, 6 week, a winter break for 6 weeks, play a lot of games in California and Florida. Thanks for your efforts, Ken in Utah. So yeah, Ken, I think we've answered most of those questions there too, but something needs to be done. And this whole kind of sticking to the plan of doing it March through November and not changing anything really, other than maybe moving up a couple of weeks, it's not going to have any dramatic impact at all. It's just it's business as usual, really. And with more teams expanding, it's going to become more and more of an issue. But MLS seems to be focused on, okay, let's not try to change things. Let's keep things the way they are. And let's keep on getting these expansion fees and keep on growing this league from a stadium perspective. Pat Haggerty says, hey all, I've grown accustomed to seeing the lineups on NBC Premier League broadcast at the bottom of the screen while players are in the tunnel. I haven't seen this. I haven't seen it this new season, and I don't really see them at all in the 15 minutes or so before the game. They're still doing lineups at the start of the second half, but I'm curious to know why they are, I guess, not running them before the game. Can you help? So, Pat, yeah, so I reached out to NBC Sports to ask them this question, and they came back, and actually the production team said that they apologised. There was one game, which I think was the Arsenal game in the first week of the season, where they weren't able to run the team lineup within about 15 minutes before the game had started. That was the only one that they missed, so they went back to every other game that they showed in the pre-match and confirmed that the team lineups were shown appropriately and correctly before the match started, and it's just that one Arsenal match. So good question there, and thanks to NBC Sports for getting back to us to make sure that we're on the page, on the ball as far as that stuff goes. Siad says, thanks for your very informative podcast. This is a unique place where soccer fans can find useful facts about TV and streaming of the beautiful game in the USA. There are so many topics that I would like to comment on, but for today, let me say something about ESPN FC as the only daily TV show that has the ambition to cover world soccer. It's obvious that one of the consequences of the paywall method behind with ESPN Plus is restrictions of the highlights. It looks like this year NBC has followed Turner Sports and Bleacher Report, where they have denied ESPN access, or ESPN FC, or ESPN FC, the show itself, access to EPL highlights. You said that ESPN FC pundits must have deeper analysis. Unfortunately, that means that they will spend more time in verbal explanation and not use their own media as an additional tool in analysis. Because of that, ESPN FC is just a good radio audio podcast, not the full TV show. Last weekend, ESPN FC talked in detail about VAR introduction in EPL, but without visual explanation, very often presenters need additional time to articulate their own point. The best example was discussion about a disallowed Wolves goal against Leicester or a penalty in the UEFA Super Cup. If I can accept the highlights issue as an excuse, I really don't understand why they do not use additional graphics in explanation of tactical changes. Last year, they talked about the way how Maurizio Sarri had used or misused Jorginho, but we have never seen any additional visual help. Or this year's Zidane's experiment with three defensive men. How will that change Casemiro's or Hazard's role and position? What really means Neymar? Who really needs Neymar as a fourth attacker for Barcelona? Did anyone in history of the top world football ever try to do that? Why not sit in the archive room, check out YouTube and the football history? Well, that requires more production efforts, more preparation. E in ESPN stands for entertainment, and I understand that somebody would like to know more about Italian food or the shepherd's pie, but for me, ESPN FC is the only TV source for European soccer. With better production and use of the television as a visual media, that show can do much better. Now, Kartik, you're an avid watcher of ESPN FC on ESPN Plus, more than I am. I try to tune in whenever I can. But what's your take on this one?
Yeah, I think you know, it's it's somewhat inconsistent in the sense that you only have a half an hour. Now they're not really hemmed in time-wise, but they sort of are. They get into some of these deeper topics in extra time when people ask questions. I respect all of those concerns, and there could be more tactical analysis. There could be maybe it's more difficult. It's like an audio podcast. And I have to admit, I mean, I watch it on ESPN Plus often. I also sometimes when I fall behind, audio podcast it and just listen to it via my my Apple Podcasts app. So I've been guilty of that also, and the explanations are sufficiently good for that. I do think there is a limit to how deep a dive you can do when you want to cover as much as they cover. So oftentimes you'll see that they try and focus on an individual match, like Chelsea Man United last week, like Athletic Bilbao Barcelona this week, and they're able to pull apart all of those things. Now, as far as larger, like tactical trends, going three at the back, etc., they generally catch on to that stuff later after it's been a trend for a few weeks. And I think also oftentimes when Stuart Robson is in the studio, which he shows up once every month and a half or so, they get into some of these deeper topics and more tactical perspectives. But I certainly do think there is room for improvement on the show, but also think that the show is absolutely indispensable, more indispensable than anything else we have access to in the U.S.
It certainly does not help ESPN FC that they don't have the highlights to these EPL games. And it's difficult. It's one of those unwritten, well, it's actually kind of unspoken deals. Well, actually, it's not even unspoken. The deals are usually done that, you know, Be in Sports will say, okay, we'll give you the highlights to La Liga and have you show them on, you know, ESPN FC. If in return we can get highlights from some of the MLS games and be able to go ahead and show those on our shows. And Be in Sports is probably a bad example because they're the ones that, historically speaking, have not liked to actually share the rights with other broadcasters. Even with SportsCenter and places like that too, each show would have to ask the other broadcaster for permission to go ahead and use those highlights. But for whatever reason, which the reason would be competitive reasons, NBC so far this season has decided not to share the highlights, goal highlights analysis or coverage with ESPN FC. And it's competitive because, yeah, ESPN building, I mean, they've got ESPN Plus, they're building this platform on the streaming side. NBC Sports, well, NBC, the giant company, the Peacock, is supposed to be launching their own streaming service next year that we're not sure in terms of how much sports coverage that will have or not, but they're building their own empire too. So at the end of the day, it hurts the soccer fans because, you mean, the broadcasters should be able to share highlights back and forth. It raises, you mean, raises all of the levels in terms of making soccer more accessible if you've got coverage on SportsCenter and ESPN Plus and other places. And it makes the jobs of the broadcasters harder too if they have to try to analyze something and they don't have any footage to analyze it. And going back to Syed's comment too, is that yes, you could do that and use some other visuals or on-screen graphics or other things to try to represent what happened. But you could be spending 20 minutes on one game at a time. You could have a show that was 3 hours that would eventually go through all of those points that you wanted to cover because you don't have the highlights to it and you had to recreate it. But by that point, you've lost the audience. So the audience is like, 3 hours? Forget that. I want 30 minutes of news to catch me up every day. So it's a difficult position to be in. Hopefully, I mean, these things do change. Hopefully, NBC Sports says, you know what, let's give you the highlights of these games to ESPN FC. And then vice versa, ESPN FC will provide things back to NBC Sports as they need it. And et cetera, throughout all of the U.S. soccer universe in terms of the broadcasters that they just share to help each other out. Anthony Bello says, hi guys, I had to turn off your podcast last week after 15 minutes. When it comes to your views of the NBC coverage of the Premier League on opening weekend, you are wrong. I feel so strongly about this. I went back to my DVR, watched the coverage again, and documented it. there wasn't as much coverage of Pulisic as you implied. Not even close. In fact, from what I see in the other sports, the coverage of Pulisic was tame. Over-coverage of the main star of a sporting event is the norm in television because they are bringing the viewer in. If you thought Sunday was bad, you should see NFL games where the only players who are hyped are the quarterbacks, or in the NBA where it feels like only the best players on each team are talked about, or in the Olympics where only 8 or 10 athletes are promoted going into the games. And Ante goes on and on and on, giving more reasons why. And I totally get where he's coming from, but for you, Kartik, and for me, Kartik especially, and for a lot of the viewership out there and listeners out there, we are dedicated to soccer. We love soccer. Our universe, for the most part, is mostly soccer watching. So I'm not watching NFL. I'm not watching the Olympics. I will watch the Olympics, but I'm not watching all these other sports. I'm watching soccer. So I don't care how those other sports carry those games, or how they basically kind of hype up a team or a player or a group of players. I don't care about that. I'm watching soccer because I love soccer, and that's what I want to watch. So to go ahead and analyze it based on how that compares to how other sports are done, and mostly American sports, I don't care, to be honest with you.
That's probably why I don't watch those sports, is I think back. I tuned out in the NFL in the mid-2000s when it was becoming all about this quarterback or that quarterback or this superstar. The NBA, something very similar. Major League Baseball, I think, was less like that. I just got tired of baseball. But there are more kind of aspects of baseball and the way it's run and evolved that I respect coming from the perspective of a soccer fan. But yeah, I think that might be why a lot of us don't watch mainstream American professional sports. And let me put in addition, it's not just you and me. I think there are a lot of people who watch the Premier League on NBC who don't watch American sports. And that's generally been their fan base. And they haven't been they've almost you have to think about even the fan base of Major League Soccer, I think, tends to be this kind of outsider, non-mainstream. A lot of hipsters support MLS. And they tend to reject, just in general in society, like celebrity-driven coverage or personality-based coverage. So I think that's – you have to think about who's actually watching soccer in this country. And I would include Major League Soccer in it.
I don't see Major League Soccer in that same bucket. I see Major League Soccer as mostly a lot of the fan base is not being hipster. Is focused more.
Not in the supporters groups, Chris. I mean, we're seeing that again these last few weeks. That I think
in the supporters
MLS
groups
has misjudged who actually watches their league and who actually pays for merchandise and is tuned into their league. Now they have casuals that show up at games on Saturdays, but I think the hardcore MLS audience is very much in that vein, just like the Premier League.
I would say that. So, but the hardcore audience that are in those supporters groups that are hardcore are a much smaller segment of the overall population of MLS fans. I'd say the majority of MLS fans are more not as diehard. They're more, yes, they support their team, but they don't care so much about the rest of the league or the rest of the teams. They will be watching probably more NBA or NFL or college football. And maybe that's part of the reason why the national television ratings, aren't as big as they are, because you have a small set of diehard fans that watch their team, don't care about the rest of the league. And then you've got the other subset of those more mainstream fans that watch other American traditional sports that are not going to be as avid. So essentially what I'm saying at the end of the day is I believe that European soccer, you can include Liga MX in this too, Mexican soccer, have a much larger group of diehard fans that will go above and beyond and do whatever it takes and will watch their team or that league, whatever time those games are shown, than Major League Soccer, which may be those fans, other than the hardcore supporters group, which is a smaller percentage, they're going to be a little bit less entrenched in that league or interested in that league. Martin Mulcahy says, looks like Fox Soccer has dropped the German man cave set for a traditional set. Not a bad idea, I suppose. Also, I've seen that they're doing full coverage with games on FS1 this past weekend. I don't hold out much hope of it being consistent given the last couple of years of coverage. But Martin, so far so good. The only issue I would have is that both the opening game of the season was on FS2, and actually this Friday's game is on FS2 also. And I think last week it was because of golf coverage. This week, I'm not sure if it's golf or something else. That's the shame of it in terms of the commitment levels and contractual problems that Fox has with having the Bundesliga. But so far so good in terms of at least having kind of the one of the major sets on Fox to broadcast the Saturday games on FS1. Two more to go. So For the Culture says that how MLS screwed up the scheduling of another showcase match, we'll never understand. And this goes back to Portland against Atlanta, 10 p.m. Eastern on FS1 last Sunday. This match should not have been buried at 10 p.m. on a Sunday. Does MLS just not care about its TV schedule? And again, we go back to the question about the calendar and the question about priorities. What is the priority for Major League Soccer? And I think really it seems to be attendances. Is butts in the seat, selling tickets, and then hoping that television comes along behind that and people are interested. To me, that's the reason that you would have a game at a 7 p.m. Eastern, or 7 p.m. Pacific time on the West Coast. Perfect time on a Sunday evening for a game in Portland to against Atlanta. It does not attract a large viewership on the East Coast from a fan base that isn't that diehard. But that's my take on that. Last but not least, Cody Wickle says, "Hey guys, very random question. I've seen in the past that Fox Sports has the broadcast rights in the US to show at least some of England's international friendlies, similar to how the US men's national team splits up rights between ESPN and Fox Sports. I was just wondering how many similar examples there are of channels companies having the right to air friendlies of specific national games or national teams. Thanks and keep up the great work." So probably a good example of this, Kartik, would be Soccer United Marketing and the Mexican national team and being able to actually sell those rights in the United States. Previously, those have been with Fox Sports. So in the build-up to the last World Cup, Fox had those rights to on the English language side to Mexican team games, all the friendlies. And then we had the Spanish language side, usually Univision showing those games. But going back to Cody's question too about England, when it was the deal for the FA Cup, when Fox had the FA Cup, included in those rights, I believe, with England national team friendlies too. But now that Fox has lost those rights to the FA Cup, they lost the rights to England international friendlies too. So you'll see, I think probably beginning this fall and forthcoming, you'll see probably a lot more of those games on ESPN or ESPN Plus or ESPN News. But yeah, so to answer your question, there are examples of other companies that have rights to specific countries, and then we'll buy those rights and show those friendlies. And other times it might be on a case-by-case basis.
Let me point out real quickly here that UEFA has bought back the rights for qualifiers and Nations League home matches from the English FA, as well as from all the FAs around UEFA. And so there's a little bit of a split between the rights for friendlies and the rights for qualifiers or / Nations League matches. Although I think those Nations League matches are on ESPN anyway in this country. And the qualifiers, I believe, are split between Fox and ESPN. I'm not totally sure. I would have to actually check because we're in a new cycle, obviously.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything from Fox about some of the games that they'll be showing. So I believe it's mostly, if not all of them, on ESPN or ESPN Plus. But again, we'll have to wait and see. Some of those schedules actually have been coming up for the first international break, which is coming up in, I think, the first or second week of September. And so far, all the games I've seen coming up on the schedule have been on ESPN or ESPN Plus or ESPN News, one of the ESPN channels. It looks like Fox is pretty much out of club soccer, and they've pretty much withdrawn from most of European soccer, even on the national side, unless it's the Bundesliga for the club soccer, and if it's a random friendly where it might be, say, US men's national team against, say, Portugal or somebody. And even then, they're splitting those games between ESPN and Fox on the English language side. So, yeah, good question there, Cody. So you can always reach us via email if you have any good questions to ask or want some advice or rants and raves or you disagree with us or agree with us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can post your comments on the website worldsoccertalk.com. So thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, Spotify, Pandora, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audioboom, Overcast, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on iTunes. And once again, thank you for listening to our show. We really appreciate your feedback. Your feedback is really what drives this show. And we really appreciate any and all comments you guys send in, and we try to read out as much of those as possible. So thank you once again. And Kartik, heading into another week of soccer. We've got the weekend with Serie A picking up, starting off, as well as other leagues from around the world. Lots of things to look forward to. What should they do?
Enjoy your football.
Choosing where to go to university is a big commitment.
By choosing to study at the University of Central Lancashire, you'll be choosing a place that will support you as you step into your future.
You'll be choosing a new place to call home.
We see our students for who they are and who they can be.
We see opportunity.
We see potential.
We see you.
There's still time to apply for a degree through Clearing.
Visit uclan.ac.uk/clearing to find out more.